Welcome to the Big Kids Book Club. A podcast about all things fictional, from middle grade to young adult. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey, 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 welcome back to another episode of the Big Kids Book Club. My name is Marcus and I'm your host. And joining us back on the show, we have the wonderful author of Gut Feelings, who we did talk to in episode 47, more on that later, and the brand new book Trigger, it's CG Moore. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's lovely to have you back. Like you said, we had you back on all the way back on episode 47. That's April 2021. And it's amazing to think that it's been so long since we last spoke.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been a lot happening and a lot kind of going on, but it just feels good to have another book out there now.
Indeed. Now, with another book out, there's been a lot of space between the two. So we brought you on for Gut Feelings, and we had a lovely chat about that. How has it been since then? Like, what has the process been like writing Trigger? And have you been up to anything exciting? Because obviously we met each other as well at the Northern YA Literary Festival.
So I've been doing a lot of events. I've gotten a few grants to work on my different books. Probably gonna get this wrong now, but in 2022, I think it was May 2022, I won the National Children's Book Award in Ireland, which has the longest title ever. So I'm just gonna preface that now, but it's the KPMG Children's Books Ireland Book of the Year Award. Doesn't quite roll off the tongue as easy, but I'm breathless now. But yeah, I've done a lot of different like workshops. I'm a reading champion for two schools in Ireland, so I'm kind of traveling back and forth. I'm doing workshops and events for Trigger, so it's kind of go 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 at the moment. There's a lot kind of happening, which is really exciting.
Absolutely, it is exciting, and a brand new book out is always another time to be excited. Now, your new book Trigger is again sort of similar to what you said that with Gut Feelings was very much about your experiences. We would say to any listeners, Trigger does fall into some very tense categories around sort of sexual assault and gaslighting and stuff like that. So if you have any sort of trigger warnings, literally, I suppose the title is very apt. You know, those are things we want to be aware of. We are going to be discussing them because they are some of the core conceits of the book. But do you want to tell us a little bit, Chris, about what Trigger is about and your need to write this book? Because it feels like this was something you had to get off the chest, put down pen to paper.
So Trigger is a verse novel. It's different to Gut Feelings in a way. There isn't as many typographical effects and things like that in there, which I'm kind of glad about, because I think the Gut Feelings was quite a personal story. And in some ways, Trigger is inspired by my own experiences, but it's not necessarily my story, because it's such a sort of delicate, such a delicate topic. I didn't really want to have anything else taking away from what the words were on the page. I didn't want obscuring anything or making that kind of difficult to read. I wanted it to be really accessible. So Trigger follows a boy called Jay, 17 years old. At the beginning of the novel, like trigger warning, it talks about sort of sexual assault and rape. And he wakes up in the park. He doesn't really know what's going on. And luckily, like, his friend gets to him. His friend takes him to the hospital, and they kind of transpires that maybe he was raped, but he can't remember. So it's the sort of the lengths he'll go, because the justice system is kind of failing him, and it's the lengths that he'll go to sort of get the answers that he needs. So my personal experience was that I was staying with a friend in San Diego, not San Francisco, and I was sexually assaulted. A guy that he brought back to our room sexually assaulted me in my sleep. So there obviously was no consent, and it felt important for me because I think that there's a lot of great books talking about things like mental health at the moment in the YA space, and sort of like neurodivergence, which I love to see. But there's kind of like a key area where I feel like the education system actually is failing young people, both in Ireland and in the UK. It really comes down to the teachers. And I think because young people are on their devices a lot, it feels quite difficult to form a connection and to communicate with them. So it feels extra difficult, and there's an extra challenge in talking to them about consent. So, you know, there's alarming statistics out there at the moment. I'm struggling to remember. I think it was about 62% of people between 18 and 25 don't recognize that you can be raped in a relationship, or a marriage, which is not the case at all. You can. Consent is important in and out of a relationship, but you can get those figures from the Crown Crown. God, this is going to test my Irish accent. Crown Prosecution Service. They've got the statistics, which it, and there's some really alarming statistics, and it makes me wonder as well about kind of kids that are coming into puberty, and like you know, we all know that there's a lot of sort of kind of misinformation out there. We all know there's a lot of peer pressure, so that felt really, really important for me to kind of represent that. So what I really wanted to do was to write a book that was inspired by my own experience, so I could get that emotion in there, but that it was a story that people could read and understand and hopefully take away. If they take away one thing, it's consent from that story.
Yes, and it's definitely one of those sort of things that stuff like consent, and I think as well there's a sort of perpetuated by I think a narrative that there's no sort of like sexual assault against men. Very much we're understanding that there is a key narrative that you know women need to feel safe, and the you know sexual assaults against women is probably something that is more in the public eye because when it's seen, it's normally just so much more horrific. But there's not that doesn't lessen the fact that men can be sexually assaulted and that they are. And again, with consent, it's more the idea, I think, that we don't quite see it, or maybe we bury our heads in the sand. So having a book that sort of opens ourselves up to like the rawness of it, I think is something that we need to do. And one thing I think really helps maybe soften that blow, but still not like lessening the value, is the way that you've written it in the sort of the verse compared to the prose. I think a story from Jay's POV, which is just purely a solid narrative, might have been a lot more difficult, I don't know, for yourself to write, but also for as a reader to really take in, like, ouch, wow, like the gut punches that you're taking. Whereas in the verse, you can feel these beautiful sort of poems, basically sort of like telling you in the narrative, still dealing with a very hard-hitting subject, but almost like allowing it just to be sort of like hit you in a sort of different way. Poetry just does something different than I think the written word does.
No, definitely. I think it also allowed you to breathe as well between sort of. So, like, when you're reading a book, there's a long chapter and it's a really difficult chapter to read. There's a lot there. But I think and I hope that what each of the poems does is kind of like a last, as it stays with you longer because there is, it's more concise, you know, and you can kind of picture that. And hopefully, there's certain, I know there's certain poems for me that really stand out. But yeah, I think that allowing the reader that space, I think also just makes it easier to kind of absorb. And I mean, it was important to put moments of hope, moments of friendship and stuff in there. So even though he's going through this, he has got support because so many people don't. Like you said, you know, male violence is still a thing as well, especially in the LGBTQ community, you know, where the sexual assault is kind of, I don't want to say it's rampant, but it's kind of casualized in a sense where people just kind of will go up and grab somebody or try and kiss someone. And I don't know if that's the same in a club for a girl, but I do know that like a lot of catcalling and things like that, there's equivalents of it. But the other thing I would kind of say is a lot of people think, and I'm not saying this isn't important, but like even a woman walking home late from a bus stop, you know, that's the danger. Actually, the danger sometimes is within the four walls of where you live. You know, the person that you live with is actually as much a danger as the sort of person in the shadows. It's not like a monster or someone that's just been released from prison, you know, or like that's the sort of, I think we kind of, it's a difficult one. And that's kind of why I wanted the story out there to really have this discussion because, like, there's a lot of misconceptions and misinformation just in general at the moment on the internet. And I think that like having hard statistics in there and sort of stories that kind of bolster representation or bolster sort of, you know, not even bolster, but like I don't know why I like that word. I never used that word in my life. But the kind of amplify or highlight some of these things. Like and I'm aware as well that a lot of teachers will just go, oh no, it's about sexual assault. We can't have that in our school. It's a sensitive subject. And I'm thinking to myself, that's great. But if you shield your kids now, what's going to happen when they're 22? Are they going to be the person assaulting someone or are they going to be assaulted? And what are they going to do? And like you're not actually laying down any groundwork. So shying away from these conversations is not helping anybody. Just because it's not a conversation you want to have. And if it's a story that you don't want to like read or you know want to discuss, then like, you know, fine, that's entirely your choice. But have the conversation, you know, regardless of whether you read my book or not. Just have a conversation with kids and make sure that's in place because it's no point in going up and saying like, oh well, you know, like Jimmy got like an A star in science or whatever. And then like he's gonna go through all of this because that's not gonna mean anything because this is, experience is like it's kind of earth-shattering for you, you know. And it's really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned two key things there that really sort of, for me, I found were very pertinent in the sort of like the way the sort of the ebb and flow of the story. One of them was friendship, because I loved the way that Jay sort of like it's interesting actually when you think of like poetry actually being able to build, because you normally think of like great friendships in the more sort of prose style, but the way that poems can really convey the growing of a friendship between, say, like Rain and Jay or Lau and Jay, and the whole sort of dynamic there, I was just like, wow, you can actually feel, you know, especially when at the early on, like Jay needs the outlet, and that Rain is there, especially in the start. It's so brilliant to see that because I think again, people feel like the suffering is solo, whereas obviously there's other people going through stuff, and there's a sort of a commonality there through pain that can bond a friendship. But it's beautiful to see that they support each other. And you mentioned there that it's not just the shadow we should be scared of, but actually the person we actually feel most connected to. Sometimes the person, you know, we are, you know, we consider a friend, or we consider them, you know, something more. And then suddenly it turns out actually maybe they're not who you think they are. Those two sort of character archetypes of the friend and the villain, they're not so black and white in this book. And it's something that's beautiful to see that, you know, in a myriad of grays, we can find our own light and darkness.
So yeah, going back to your point on friendship, I think it's interesting because those characters were always the characters that like I had. Like I wasn't like necessarily consciously being like, oh, it was representation or oh, it was this. They were just the characters. Like I can't really describe it. I think I'm lucky that I've exposed myself to a lot of like different people and groups that make it easy for me to embed people, like to embed an aspect of a story that I suppose highlights something else within my community or my life. But I'm not trying to force it, you know, and I'm kind of thinking about the people. So like with Rain being non-binary and what they've kind of gone through, like that's not my story to tell. Rain's story is not my story, my character, but not my story, and not my POV even. And then with Lau, I've got a lot of family kind of in the Philippines, and I've got a lot of friends that are Chinese Canadian and stuff like that. So that name has just always been in my head. So although obviously, you know, sort of there's a clue to what his sort of ethnicity is, it was never, you know, trying to do that. But the most important thing was like trying to almost have two friends, like a new friend and an old friend, and talking about like how you don't have to be gay and be in a relationship, because I think that's something growing up where like, oh, it's two guys and both of them are gay. Well, they're in a relationship, and the sort of projections that society and family and friends have on them, which, you know, is quite interesting. And that's the thing I think I'm most happy about in this book, showing that like you don't have to go through that alone. I forget the second part of the question, sorry, or the second part of your comment. So there was friendship and.
And then the villainy is the idea is that we're not always scared of the shadow. Sometimes the threats can be someone closer to home.
No, definitely. And I think, you know, with Jay's boyfriend, it's interesting because like I think I let the reader decide what they want to make of him in the story. And I don't want to go into too much, but you know, there probably is an aspect of what he's doing where he's doing it for other people, but he's also manipulating people's trust, isn't he? Like to sort of get what he wants. And there's people like that. I've known people, we've all probably known people in our life that will manipulate a situation to, I mean, politicians, but that will manipulate a situation like, hello, Conservative Party. No, I'm joking. We can edit that. We could do that in post-production.
Yes.
But there are people out there that will manipulate people. And it's like sometimes it's just people just wanting to get on and just like climb the ladder. But I think a lot of the times that sort of behavior kind of does come from a place of pain for a lot of people. Like, so whether it's growing up in poverty or that, and I'm not saying those people that grow up in poverty are going to go around manipulating people, but I'm saying the circumstances behind what people do. And sometimes as well, because we live in an instant culture and an instant culture, that we actually just judge people based on one thing, and that's why kind of cancel culture comes into play. And don't get me wrong, I think there's instances where people say things and it's like you categorically know that should not be said, you know, and but yeah, I think for me it was just interesting to explore that and get people to think about the characters and kind of flesh out more of it. So to leave a some ambiguity, I suppose, to let them kind of make up their own minds, because I think that's the most important thing. Like I write the story, readers take what they want away from it. It's not for me to dictate whether that story's for them or whether that story resonates with them. That's they're bringing their experience to that book as well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And those experiences obviously are conveyed in such short, snappy passages in the poems that it's interesting to, when I see a book like this, wonder how different the editing and the sort of like the development process is. Because obviously, like when you're just editing stuff and you're going through like chapters, like you said, some real long chapters talking about difficult stuff can be difficult for a reader to get through. When you're deciding like what poems make the cut and what need to be told and what can be like removed or they're just excess and stuff like that, how do you keep it so, because it keeps the story tight, it keeps the story moving, keeps the story punchy, you know, but keeping that message across, like how do you go through, because obviously each poem really is almost like a piece of art in itself. It's like, how would you curate a museum or an art gallery, you know, how, what picture makes the cut, in which case in this, what poem makes the cut, how did you decide that?
So I guess I'd have to rewind about like 7 or 8 years ago, but not 7, 8, maybe 6 years ago. I was basically trying to get a grant for this book, and they said it's not working. So I wrote it in prose, and I wrote this scene where, so the actual there's a scene in the book where he sees this guy go outside, and he thinks the guy is going to be sort of abducted or something's going to happen to him, and he kind of runs out. And there was a scene where Jay was in that alley, and the same thing was kind of happening to him, and he was kind of almost being like abducted and stuff like that. And that was, I was writing that scene. I think the Arts Council kind of said at the time, and this was the Irish Arts Council, because I was actually based in Ireland when I started the idea, they were kind of saying, oh, it doesn't really, it wasn't powerful, it wasn't really working, it wasn't as strong. And if you hear pitter patter, by the way, it's my dogs just kind of come into the room. So just as an FYI. But I think that they were right in many ways, so I tried to do it kind of with, you know, verse. And I don't really know when it clicked. It was probably several years later, and certainly after Gut Feelings, because there was a long gap, I think, where I felt I was writing. I don't even know what it was. I just felt a bit like there was a lot going on in my life, and I felt like I couldn't write. So there was a year where I was trying to write and trying to push something that wasn't working. But then when it clicked, and I wrote kind of quite quickly, which was great. And I knew what the story was going to be, so I kind of wrote it. I think I wrote the book probably in a couple of months, maybe 3 months. Like, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew everything. Mind you, like, it was a year before where I struggled, right? But once I knew, I knew. So I had about 3 months. I think I worked it out somewhere. It was about 9 weeks, I think, that I wrote the whole thing. But then when I wrote it, it wasn't the book it is now. So at the end, there was a scene with a gun, which was quite melodramatic. I think it took away from what I was trying to do. So I actually sent it to two agents, and they had an issue with the same thing. And then I sent it to a friend, and a friend was like, actually, you, that's the same thing. So there was a lot of kind of things where I was able to kind of do, you know, to kind of scale it back a bit and just focus on the emotion. But most of the poems were kind of the same. I did add in a couple of extra ones. I kind of was looking at like, is this doing the same thing as another thing? Is this like what's actually happening with this? And it, like, there were certain poems where, I mean, it was really funny because, like, some of the, I mean, I will not admit this on any other podcast or interview, but I remember there was a song I was listening to where, so there's a poem called I Have Questions, and I was listening, for some reason I was listening to Camila Cabello's I Have Questions, and then that became something. So like, I literally, like, it wasn't like I was taking like what the actual anything with the, it was just the title was in my head. I was like, this is, because this feeds into what he's actually trying to figure out, and this just makes sense. And then everything else is obviously like just my own continuation of the narrative. But it was funny because I know some people are like, I can only listen to, like, you know, classical music. I'm weird, I listen to everything. But yeah, it was, I guess for me, it's like a verse novel is the heart, and each poem is the heartbeat. So you want to make sure that there's like levels to it where it's faster, but then it's slower, and there's kind of that pace, but that every word and every poem on the page is doing what it needs to do. Because I get asked a lot, are you going to write in verse, you know, all the time now, just in case that's a question, I won't answer it. But people asking, are you going, oh, is it only going to be in verse? And I think, like, what I love about verse is my personal experience. Like, I can bring that to it, and I know what I'm doing. Like, once I find the voice, I know what I'm doing. So it's a bit easier, but it doesn't mean that every story I tell has to be in verse. I want to make the ones that are in verse very special and kind of in some way connected to me and my experience.
Absolutely. And this was very special. I absolutely loved it. It was definitely one of those ones you have to, once you finish the book, you put it down, you just sit down and just let it like breathe and just allow yourself to just like drink in what you've just experienced. Trigger is out right now from the lovely people at Little Island. You can go check it out at your friendly local bookshop or your local library. Do check it out. It's definitely, like I said, this isn't something we should shy away from. It's a conversation. It's a tough one. But in a book such as this, we can handle it and we can experience it just a little bit better. So please do check it out, lovely listeners, if this is something that's interested you. Chris, beautiful for you to come back on the show again. I really enjoyed the fact I got to get hold of Trigger and experience this. We want to know now if there's anything else you mentioned there, like about writing in verse, or if you're going to try, you know, tackle some prose. Have you got anything currently on the writing desk that you're trying to do?
So I've sent something across to my publisher, and it needs a rework, which is fine. It'll probably take me a few months to do that because I have to rethink. I basically said it in America, and it can't be sent in America for various reasons. But I'll say that it's a coming out story. I don't want to say too much. It's a coming out story, and there's a massive, massive twist to it. I don't think it's been done before, not that I know, in the UK or US YA. So if I get it right, it'll be like really, really interesting. I just think I need to do a bit of tweaking. The characters and all are there. There's comedy. There's a lot of like humor in it, which kind of lifts it. And I think that's not always something that I think I get to do in my writing. And then I kind of put, while I was putting that away, I kind of started to work on like a dystopian. So it's completely different for me. But both of those are in prose. I do want to write another verse novel. I just don't want to do it for the sake of like prestige, or like to try to seek sort of a like literary acclaim or whatever. When I tell my stories, I tell my stories the way that I want to tell them, and the way that they feel resonate with me. And if people sort of, you know, like that, or you know, it gets an award or it gets nominated, whatever, great. But it's not something I actively seek, because I think the minute I start to tell a story that's not mine or not the way I want to tell it, it kind of comes across that it's a bit like there's a disingenuity in what I'm saying, and you can kind of tell that comes through in the story if that's the case. So yeah, a few different things going on. I think I'm probably not going to get to write now for I would say 2 months, because I work pretty much full time. I've saying that I'm a reading champion for two schools in Ireland. I've got workshops, I've got promo. I'm being carted around, but that makes it sound dramatic. But I am being like taken around to 8 different bookshops in Ireland to sort of just write and sign books, which is great, because I never got to really go into a bookshop and do signings because it was always during the pandemic, which I think is also partly with gut feelings why I found it difficult from gut feelings to trigger, is because we were still kind of in that phase of the pandemic. It was quite difficult coming out of it and not knowing what was happening. But yeah, there it is.
Oh, fantastic. There's lots of stuff going on. You're going to be very busy.
I think I'm going to be very busy, yeah. Hopefully.
Well, we will not take up too much more of your time then. Chris, it's been fantastic to have you back on the show. Lovely listeners, again, please do check out Trigger. It's out right now. And also, again, Gut Feelings, we've just mentioned it there. You can check out a bit more of us discussing that on episode 47. So do check that out in the old podcast archives. But Chris, thank you once again for coming on the show. It's been lovely to have you. Do you have any social media or website links that you want to just throw at our lovely listeners so they can find out more about you and your books?
Yes, don't go onto my website, because that needs a revamp. As people were taking my bio and they were saying, oh, da-da-da-da-da. And I think at the end of one of my bios, it says, when Chris isn't baking, he's playing with his Jack Russell Ruby, and she sadly passed away quite like 6 months ago. I haven't updated it, so it's like reliving the trauma. It's something I do need to do. But with links, I think it's CG, oh god, it's gonna test me, CG Moore author on Instagram, and CG Moore _ author on Twitter. What are we calling the X now, which is ridiculous, but yeah, I'm still gonna call it Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly the same. Oh, fantastic. Well, there you go, lovely listeners. Don't forget, you can find out more about our content at Big Kids Book Club. That's on obviously Twitter/X, or you can go to bigkidsbookclub.com. There you find additional reviews, previews, and like I said, that archive of over 190 episodes where you can find episode 47 and when we spoke to Chris last. That is going to be all the time we have for this week, I'm afraid, though. So until next time, my lovely listeners, don't forget to take care, to stay safe, but most importantly, to keep on reading.